At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This week on Red Dead Radio, he's seen Red Dead Redemption 2 and we're going to talk about it!
Yeah, I did. He's a whole lot. I haven't watched him since.
Hi friends, welcome to Red Dead Radio, the Red Dead Redemption podcast. I'm your host, Jared Petty, and as always, we're going straight to the Wild Wild Guest.
We're going straight to the Wild Wild Guest. We're going straight to the Wild Wild Guest. Yeah!
That was incredibly intense.
Really?
Yes, good God, man.
I'm passionate about video games and guests. Guests like you. Who are you?
Hi, I'm John Ryan.
You are John Ryan. John Ryan, you are here because you know a whole lot about Red Dead Redemption 2.
I do. I do know a whole lot about that cool video game that's coming out in like 6 months from now. Five and some change.
Okay, so the fact that you're having to estimate right now already means that...
The real issue for me is that it's just not already October the 25th.
Is that it? Yeah.
That's my real problem.
Okay.
Is that I just can't have it now because I've seen it. It's like that moment at the end of Scrooged where he's like, I know what it looks like. I've seen it and I want it and it can happen to you. But I don't have it yet. I can't play it.
So it's like, it will be mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yes. It will be mine. Yes. I'm going to ask you, for Red Dead's sake, kind of lean in on this mic a little bit. You got to love
right
it.
Here.
You got to love
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can do this.
Yeah, you can angle it up a little if you
no,
want.
I don't want to do that.
You don't want to angle that mic up?
That's okay. I'll just talk normally.
You're going to talk normally.
I think that's
right
fine,
there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Anyways, I wore this fun hat because I had it in my closet, but it's all crushed and sweaty, so I'm going
to
take it off.
You got to wear that on the subway in San Francisco today.
I did, yeah.
Did you feel like a cowboy guy?
A little bit, and then I mostly just felt weird.
Yeah, I'm good. You know what? I think it's good testing. Where'd you get it?
I stole it from a friend of mine.
Oh, okay. So it's not a product of...
Hope you're not watching that. Sorry, Walker and or Zach. I'm not sure which one of you I stole this from.
Walker, Texas Ranger?
He did also give me a duster.
The eyes of the ranger are upon you.
That's very true.
That's it. Ranger Trevette, RIP. Miss you, man.
Oh, man.
Wow. All right, moving forward here. So all chicanery aside... We're going to jump straight into Shootout, which is Red Dead Redemption News. Now, we keep saying to people, well, we're going to cover some more next week. We're going to cover some more next week. This is the news episode you've been waiting for because John Ryan, unlike most human beings on this planet.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to think about.
You've actually seen like with Red Dead 2
eyes.
In action with
it's
your
so,
eyes.
That's such a strange thing to think about because it's always just like, you know, you go to preview events and you're just like, oh, well, that's cool. Like, it's part of the job.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's like... I've seen things that maybe outside of people who work on the game itself, like outside that company, I think maybe 7 other people have seen with their own two eyes. Like, that's crazy to me.
It's really exciting.
That is 6 billion other people.
And now you're going to convey that in sweet, sweet audio form.
In nice, beautiful words.
That sounds nice. You got to lean in like that. So hopping right in, John, you've seen the game in action.
Yeah.
For IGN, you did part of the preview, right?
Yeah. So myself and Daniel Krupa and Alex Simmons from the IGN UK team, we all went to Edinburgh in Scotland, which is where the Rockstar North offices are. And we went to get a super, super cool like tour of their studios. It's this awesome, awesome facility where, I mean, it was like being on, like, when people ask you what the future is going to look like, I feel like that's kind of loosely what it looks like.
It looks like Edinburgh?
No. Edinburgh is old as hell, but it specifically looks like the inside of the Rockstar North Studios.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It was like I walked into it, and it's like this huge open atrium. Anyway, it
lean into the mic, or I'll kill you.
Jesus, fine. I felt like I was on Hugo Drax's bass from Moonraker.
Yeah.
Like when I first walked in, I was like, oh, but there was like cool rock star art everywhere instead.
Okay.
So anyways, yeah, so we get to go. We got a chance to talk to Rob Nelson, who is the co-head of Rockstar Nero Studio, as well as a bunch of other folks mm-hmm. who are working on the game, like art team, animation designers, AI designers.
Wow, got to ask all the questions.
We literally ended up having a lengthy conversation with almost every department.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool.
So what was the message they were trying to convey? And then you actually saw the game in action.
Yeah, on top of talking to everybody about stuff, you know, we got a chance to see. We got a 45-minute demo, which if you're not familiar with how game previews work, that's crazy long.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And there's a lot of details about this on IGN.com right now. You can read through it.
I'm happy to be here to chat with you, but you should also go to IGN.com, check out the stuff that I put up and that Krupa put up and that Simmons put up. A lot of great preview content there, as well as we talked about it on Unlocked. The Beyond crew talked about it for a bit, and then also the IGN UK team did a whole special podcast about it.
Well, let's hear your direct impressions. I want to know, I'm just going to open the floor here and kind of say, John just ran about this game for a while.
Hoo boy. First and foremost, you know the life of a guide writer, which I do. I write a lot of IGN's wikis. I'm terrified to write the guide for this game.
Is that a matter of scope?
Yeah, I mean, a matter of scope and a matter of depth. Really depth more than anything else.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
So it's a hard thing to try and explain everything succinctly.
Okay.
You know, the ways that the systems sort of all layer and stack on top of each other, mm-hmm. I don't really know where to properly start on that front. I'll tell you what. There's you know about the new AI system relatively, the interaction system with the NPCs.
Let's assume the audience doesn't.
Okay. There is the way that you interact with NPCs in Red Dead, and not just like secondary characters or people who are crucial to the plot experience, but just like NPCs, like people who in GTA 5 would just exist on a sidewalk for you to hit with your car or try and avoid if you're a good person. Now that's not just a meat bag anymore.
Okay, that's a person.
It's a person. And that's the whole crux of it, is that they're really trying to create this super, super detailed, super... It's surreal in the sense that it's the Old West, mm-hmm. but you're also... It's just very lifelike.
Is this Westworld? Everybody's got a backstory?
I don't think it's fair to say, you know, it's Westworld specifically, but like that's kind of an apt analogy. You know, it's one of those situations where you go, like if on the demo that we had, we saw basically, we took Arthur Morgan, who's the new protagonist. He got asked to go and hunt for some more meat for the camp because the camp is running low on food. And so, you know, being a good dude, we happily obliged.
Okay.
And, you know, we ran into a few different people along the way who were just out in the world doing their own thing. And unlike most NPCs, they all have places they're going. So, like, if you see a guy riding along the street on a horse, you know, he's not just... bloop placed into that position on the world to exist so you can see him. He's going to a place. He's coming from somewhere.
He's off there doing something.
He has his own schedule.
We talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago. The closest I've been able to frame this is that scene in Jumanji where you're in the NPC's camp and they're all talking about the player characters. Have you seen this? The Jumanji rock movie?
Oh!
I thought
you meant the original one.
Okay,
I thought I was like, what happened?
No.
Where?
No, the Jumanji with the Rock. There's NPC. They're in a video game.
Yeah, I knew the setup for it. Okay, I should have gotten that through context.
No, that's okay. There's a scene where the NPCs are all just in their camp talking about how to go after the heroes next, and it is kind of like that moment you've always wanted to look into, where you're like, well, here's what those guys are doing when I'm not fighting them.
Well, and so that's the thing is that there's that now is them just living their lives.
Okay,
in every other game, like you see this a lot. And, you know, I really enjoyed the new Assassin's Creed games. I liked Watch Dogs 2 a lot. But you see this in a lot of open world games where every NPC pretty much just exists for you to engage with.
Yeah.
You know, you show up, you go to their little town, and then you save the world. And, like, other games have sort of done this okay and, like, made it a little bit more apparent that you're, like, a little person in a big world, but you're still the chosen one or the superhero of that land. And in this, you're just kind of some guy.
Wow.
I mean, you have this you're wanted by the law. So there's that kind of ever-present danger of, like, I can't get in too much trouble.
Yeah.
Because A, I might get killed. B, this might lead people back to my camp. I don't know if that's like a dynamic thing that can happen. I don't think, I'm sure you could eventually lead cops back to your, or sheriffs or marshals, I guess, not necessarily cops.
Well, whatever.
The law. I'm sure law dog.
Oh, no, come on now. I don't know if the posse will like show up and affect the camp in part of the story.
Yeah.
Because the way that that sort of functions is that, you know, it's a Rockstar game. You're supposed to be able to go out, do whatever you want, fuck around, and then progress the story as at your own pace.
Yeah.
But instead of it being this weird thing where, like, you know, in GTA 5, like, if I wanted to switch to Trevor, I would just go and be a fucking psychopath for months at a time.
Okay.
And then eventually I would go back to Michael, and they'd be like, oh, it's the very next day from the last mission.
Yeah.
Even though it had been 7, 8, 9, 20 day-night cycles.
By yeah.
In this, it's more about sort of the abstract time in that sense. So, like, you'll go away for a while, and you'll come back, and your absence is noted.
Things
like,
are different.
Things are a little, like, not massively different,
yeah.
But, like, things are changed because, you know, while you were there, maybe the watch shift got changed up. Like, maybe somebody new is responsible for getting firewood. Also, depending on how long you've been gone, like, and if you, that means you haven't been there to help with camp. So, where the fuck were you, dude? Like, it's not necessarily, I don't think, going to affect, like, big, heavy story beats.
Yeah.
But it will have an impact, and you'll sort of create your own sort of contextual relationships with the people in the game.
I like that idea that the world had moved on. I mean, yeah. What do you think? There's a game design challenge here. Obviously, they're trying something tremendously ambitious because this is pretty unprecedented. What do you think the challenges are going to be around creating a universe for gamers where they are not the center of the universe? Or at least they're made to feel like they're not. Because we're used to being the center of the universe.
Well, I mean, and that's what I really love about this. I mean, I wrote a whole thing about this for IGN, that, like, the best thing about this world is that it doesn't give a shit about you. You don't matter. I mean, you do because you're the center of the story, and the developers have worked super hard to make sure that you can inhabit this world and have fun in it and explore it, and there's a lot for you to do. But I think it's super ironic that in order for that to happen, for you to have that kind of great experience, they had to make it so that it can't care about you.
Wow.
So that, like, the emergence of it is, you know, you sort of showing up in this world, in this place where you don't necessarily belong. Like, one of the things that they were talking about, like, you know, for example, if you want to go out in the world and cause chaos, as is many want to do in Rockstar games, if you, like, walk into town, you start hooping and hollering, like, the sheriff will come over to you and be like, hey, man, is there a problem? Like, can you stop it? Like, don't be a dick.
Wow.
So backtracking all the way to where we started. Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
That's okay.
That's like sort of trying to change the way that you interact with the open world itself.
Okay.
So with Red Dead 1, it was very binary action.
Mm-hmm.
You had the red decision or you had the blue decision. The red decision was to shoot a man. The blue decision was to not. Like, that was basically it.
Right.
With this, there's gray area in the middle. Like, you can have a conversation with somebody instead of just shooting them. So, like, we came up on somebody riding along, and in our case, we found this dude who was fishing on the side of the river, and, like, we rode a little bit past him, and his camp setup was there, and we just started robbing him because he wasn't around. And so we're like, oh, whatever,
let's take his stuff.
We're just take his stuff. But also, super quick shout out to crazy attentive level of details on this front. Like, it wasn't like in the first one where it's just like there's a box that looks like every other box to pick up.
Okay.
There's a little animation for opening. It's just like Arthur just like kneels down and like he's got all of this like custom created.
Oh, wow.
Furniture, like, you know, camp furniture. So it's like little tiny chests of drawers, small pouches, satchels, everything. And he independently, like, opens each bag, like, opens little drawers.
Like, rifling through all this stuff.
Actively rifling through everything.
Wow.
And it's, like, all dependent on, like, what you're choosing to go through. So anyways, the dude's adorable yet stupid dog followed us.
Okay.
Because we attracted his attention while we were riding by on horseback. And the dude naturally saw his dog get really upset, and so he followed with us. And so he shows up, and he's like, what the fuck, guys? Come on, like, you're right. And he goes to start leaving, and so Arthur just turned, like, instead of you know, Red Dead 1, your option would be to either let him go and be a witness mm-hmm. or shoot him in the back.
Right.
And instead, he basically like whipped around and was like, stop, stop moving, stop. And the dude like turns around and you can, instead of just shooting him, you have the option to be like, no, you know what? You're not going to tell the pops because I could kill you. I don't want to, but I could do it. And then depending on who that random dude is, like all of, so all the NPCs essentially have a type of personality.
Yeah. Which is not transparent on the surface.
No, no. Right. You can't like look at a dude and be like, oh, that's a bad guy. That's a good guy.
Yeah.
That's a coward. That's a brave guy. They're just fucking folks. And so this dude kind of happened to be a little bit of a coward. And he was like, okay, like eventually we're like, you know, we could kill you right now. And he was like, okay, it's fine. I'm not going to say anything. But then to like add insult to injury, the guy who was playing our demo was like, you know what? No. Give me your fucking money. I'm going to rob you.
That's so mean.
It was so mean. But the dude was like, what? He was like, give me your money. And he was like, okay, God. And like threw him a bag of coins. And like Arthur was like, that's right. And like he just turned around and walked away. And that was the end of it.
Weird. Okay, and is that gonna, that's going to be affected as his personality type and the history and if you encounter
this guy
again?
Well, so that's the fun thing is that it's, you know, I don't necessarily, it sounds like they're not going to like, basic NPCs, just like random fucking guys that you meet out in the world. Like, it doesn't sound like they're going to necessarily remember every single detail of your interactions.
Uh-huh.
But if you run into that same guy by sheer happenstance in town again, like, he's not going to like you. He might not remember why, but
yeah,
he's going to be pissed at you. Like, if you saw him and you walked over to talk to him, he's going to be hostile. He's going to be like, no, I don't want to fucking talk to you.
I assume some of this is going to feed into the context of time of day and other history and mood and other things.
Yeah, I have to assume so. That's like, it all depends.
Web.
Well, because the world itself runs on a schedule. So, like, you're like to meet different people out in the world during the nighttime than you are during the daytime.
Right.
Like, at, you know, daytime, you'll probably see a lot of shopkeepers around town. You'll probably see, you know, some lawmen, some sheriffs.
Yeah.
But at night, you'll probably see a lot of drunks. You'll probably see a couple of courtesans. You'll probably meet a bunch of the more nefarious members of society.
I love that you use nefarious.
I love that word. It's a great word.
We're going to take a break here for just a moment because we have to. But we're going to hop right back in with more Red Dead Redemption news from somebody who's seen it firsthand.
Thanks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. All right, John. So
that was a fun break.
Yeah, it was. You told us a little bit about how the systems of interaction work. Tell us about Arthur.
Hoo boy. He's a fucking strong dude.
Strong? What do you mean?
Well, okay. So, I mean, that's just like one of the first random tidbits. Like, so the whole demo was like him hunting. Well, not the whole demo. Like, the first like half of it was him like out in the woods and trying to find something to eat. So he eventually ends up killing a deer, which is a really horrifyingly brutal thing to do.
Really?
But oh yeah. Like the bit in God of War, I assume you've all have played that at some mm-hmm. point, where the kid has to like stab it and he's like, don't be sorry, be better, finish what you started.
Okay.
It was the like most grisly version of that event that you could possibly experience. Like he like, so one of the, like a bunch of tiny little details kind of popped out at me through this entire demo. Like, in this particular case, I know I'm not talking about Arthur right now, but it's just
that's
a thing that I have
just,
to get
no,
on.
No, get it. That's okay. Red Dead's a game about tangents. You just
it
go
really ahead. Is. The world itself, just like the little details and interactions and little touches that they've added to it, are really cool. So, like in this hunting scenario, for example, Arthur comes up on a like two or three deer from a little ridge, and instead of just like trying to take the right shot, he like and whistles at him, and all three of them are just like, like all look his
oh, wow.
way.
Okay.
And you know, he fires off at one of them and we kind of didn't kill it right away.
Oh, you winged it.
Yeah. And not in a good way either. So it like freaks out and like starts like hobbling away, trying to escape. And so we chase it up and over ridge, and eventually like you watch it kind of like slow down and slow down and slow down and then fall over. But as you walk up on it, it is like mewling and screaming, and it's like really, really horrible.
Like real hunting.
Yeah, like real hunting. And that's the thing where it's like, it is as you know, he walks up and it's like, I mean, it's spazzing the fuck out. It is incredibly visceral. Mm-hmm. And he just walks up, puts a knife through his ribs and it goes, but it was just like, oh, I was very uncomfortable for a hot second there.
Wow.
And like in a good way, it's, I appreciate when games make me have that sort of almost physical response to something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, he kills it. And okay. then since we need it for meat, when I say he's strong, I mean, he literally just fucking deadlifts a 5-point buck over his shoulder and just walks away with it like it's a bag of flour.
Did that feel unrealistic to you? Or?
No, I mean, that's the thing is like, he's a big, big dude.
Okay.
His shtick is that he is Dutch Vanderlyn's like numero, he's his number one guy.
Yeah, he's like Sergeant Major, right?
I exactly, mean, yeah. He's his right-hand man, his lieutenant.
Okay.
While Dutch is like the big picture guy, he's more of like the day-to-day operations. This job is happening. This is who needs to do it. We need to make sure that everyone's like accounted for, taken care of, and looked after.
Did you like him?
I did, yeah, I did.
Why did you like Arthur?
So a lot of people, after that first reveal trailer dropped, the second trailer for the game, a lot of people were like, man, Arthur's a dick. and, you know, I was one of them at first because yeah. I was just like, oh, like he just seems like that whole bit where he's just like, maybe I'll keep him black on your behalf. And I'm like, oh, why are you so cruel?
Yeah.
At everything. And then, you know, we learn a lot more about him in the second, about the events of the game in the second trailer, or in the third trailer. And we learn a lot more about him just from talking with the folks at Rockstar. And it's like, you know, he got kind of brought into the folds of Dutch's gang, like as a literal child,
yeah.
not necessarily like 17 or 18, like a young adult, but like a kid. So this is like, it's the only life he's ever really known.
Yeah.
And more importantly, the gang is the only family he's ever really had.
Okay.
So, you know,
so these are the people he loves.
Exactly. And it's one of those situations where, you know, you see a moment like the Keeper in Black moment from that second trailer, or him grabbing that dude like, where's our money? Just a side note, that's just always stuck in my head on permanent loop whenever I see a picture of Arthur.
Yeah.
Because I was cutting a thing.
Where's my money?
Because I was cutting a thing for IGN one time, and it was like a Snapchat thing almost.
Okay.
And it just kept looping that one little bit. Just like, where's our money? Where's our money? Where's our money? It was very good. It drove me mad.
Yes, I can tell.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Do you have that loop still? Like,
No. I burned it. And the computer that it was on.
He's a madman.
God. Anyways, so seeing those moments again in that context
yeah.
of knowing that it's less about him just being a dill hole and instead doing what it takes to protect the people he loves. Like, he's still like a hard dude. Like, he's still someone he's not someone that I would probably want to be friends with.
Yeah.
Were I someone who lived in the 1800s. But I get why he's doing it.
Well, I like Western gang films, which obviously,
oh, yeah.
you know, The Wild Bunch comes to mind immediately, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance uh-huh. Kid. But the dialogue from the Red Dead trailers around the gang, as much as anything else, is reminding me of kind of a weird combination of some of the more poetic, you know, fire stuff from the
oh
from
yeah,
the
third. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Obviously,
the grandiose
yeah,
kind of Dutchness of it all.
The Dutchness of it all. That's definitely got a little more There Will Be Blood in it. But
oh, yeah.
But I also like some of the more rough stuff really is Bonnie and Clyde-ish.
Reminds
me of that film a lot, well, the dialogue from that.
So it reminds me, it's maybe not a weird anecdote, but the thing that I kept thinking throughout the entirety of like the time that I like just spent with the game and talking to them.
Yeah.
When I walked away from it, I was like, you know, I know it's a cowboy tale and it's similar in a lot of ways, but like, this is a pirate story.
Hmm.
And you know, I get like, sure, pirates are kind of the cowboys, but in boats.
Yeah.
But this is really like looking at sort of the big picture of things for the gang itself. Like Dutch's whole ideal, like Dutch's on an ideological, not Jesus Christ, on an ideological level, Dutch is trying to just like provide a life for these people that is just free from the what he believes to be the super corrupt rule of government.
Yeah.
So it's like
he's the ultimate libertarian.
They're trying to build yeah, pretty much. Like they're trying to found their own Libertalia in California.
Yeah.
And so this sort of notion of striving for that but also being stuck where they are hunted by the law at the same time. Like, there's a lot of stressors at play there.
Well, the West was a place where people did try to form kingdoms, a couple of times. I mean, the Salt Lake City exists because a group of people who were persecuted decided, well, screw this, we're getting out of here.
Yep.
And they went off to effectively found their own civilization so far away that they thought no one would care for a very long time. And Western expansion happened faster than they thought.
Yes, it did.
And they built
some nice tabernacles, though.
They did. They did a lot of things. I think about Wild Wild Country. Have you watched that on Netflix?
No, I haven't.
That's about the Rajneeshis in the 1980s in Oregon.
Okay.
A group of people that came over from India and tried to form a commune in the American West on a ranch. And the ridiculous chicanery and fantastic story that arose around that. The idea of trying to build their own ideal civilization in the middle of nowhere. And what came out, it's an interesting series.
Yeah,
it's a modern day Western.
Cool. That sounds great. It's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah,
and so should you.
Yeah, it's a really interesting piece. It is.
But yeah, I mean, and so, you know, I see why folks might consider Arthur kind of like a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not necessarily like the reformed, like the romanticized version of the like reformed outlaw that John was in the first one. Instead, it's, you know, it's being kind of stuck in the middle of this world that is constantly just trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And not in the sense of like a zombie apocalypse scenario, but literally just like everybody, if one of those NPCs in town knew who I was, they would spit at me, they would hate me, they would call the sheriff immediately.
Yeah.
And like, it's that notion that the noose is just kind of ever tightening for every second that you're not on the move towards because where you want to get.
They're after you. There's no escape.
Exactly.
They're constantly coming. And you may deserve it, but that doesn't mean you'll want it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, there's that. I mean, the third trailer, it starts with that, you know, we don't want to kill you.
But we will.
But we will.
We'll do it. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, where you look at the Keeper in Black line, you look at Where's Our Money, you look at even the bit with in the very beginning of the third trailer where he's like, we're not people, we're ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
It's that notion of this is the hand we've been dealt and it's going to really suck to make a good play out of it, but we've got to try.
Do what we can. I like that. I like that element. I think that'll be a compelling thing to be a part of.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's going to lead to some really interesting interactions within the gang itself. Like on a personal theory level, I think that the end of the first trailer, the one piece of voiceover in it is like, you know, when it all goes to hell, like you got to run, you got to don't look back. This is done. This is over.
Yeah.
Personally, I feel like that's Arthur talking because we know it's Arthur, but I feel like that's him talking to John at the very end. But like, I'm really curious to see like when you have formed all these relationships with these people, because like, you know, you do get to know everybody from the first gang for the first game who was part of the gang.
Right.
But like through a very different prism, you know, like Bill Williamson, for example, in the first game, he is this sort of bombastic, cruel, like really powerful outlaw.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's just kind of a dipshit.
Right.
Like he's the Curly of the Three Stooges. I mean, he's still like a good
not
shot.
Not the Shep?
And he's still, no, God, no. Ugh, the boo. No, Shep, I'm going to rip the fuck out of here. This is not, we are not a Shep household, sir. you know, I mean, he's not like a slapstick wacky character, but he's clearly not the smartest of the bunch.
Yeah.
And they all damn well let him know that pretty regularly, but it seems. Like,
yeah, they're just going to remind you of your place here, Bill.
Right, exactly.
So why do they keep Bill around?
Because he's good with a gun and he's handy to have in a stick-up.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he was part of the mission that we saw was a bank heist in this tiny town of Valentine in this area that New Hanover was the, like, section of the map that we were exploring. And so, yeah, we took Bill on a heist because Bill was mad at Arthur because apparently he had botched a job or something.
Yeah.
And there was this really great notion that kind of speaks to how Bill is kind of placed in the gang where, you know, he's going after Arthur, but he's like, you son of a bitch, like, you did it, like, you fucked up, this is bad, like, you owe us money from this score. And I was just like, man, it was just one of them things. Well, I'm sorry. And Bill gets real pissed about it because he's just like, how come every time I fuck up, you know, I'm the village idiot. I'm the town drunk. I'm the bane of existence. I'm the dumbass. But when you fuck up, it's just one of them things. Hmm. And like, you can see everybody in the group around him be like, well, until one guy's finally like, I mean, look, it's kind of a bad double standard, Arthur. Like, come on. And so you begrudgingly are like, all right, fine, fucking whatever. But everybody fucking knows there's a reason that when Bill fucks up, Bill fucks up. And when Arthur fucks up, it's usually just one of them things.
It's very Jane Cobb.
I think very much. Bill is, I think that's the most apt description I've heard. Bill Williamson is essentially the Jane Cobb of Dutch's gang. But without the redeeming qualities.
Okay, because Jane does have...
Jane ultimately does have a soul.
Well,
I don't know if Bill does.
He's the hero of Canton.
Mm-hmm. The man they call Jane.
Yeah. For those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, watch one of the best westerns ever, set in outer space, Firefly.
It's very good.
It is. It's spectacular. You're starting to talk about the gang. That was going to be my next question. Anyway, cool. Let's keep leaning in. What can you tell us about the rest of these characters? I'm very curious about Sadie.
Adler?
Yeah.
So Sadie, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about her.
Okay, we haven't learned much yet.
No, we haven't really learned a whole lot about anybody except for, you know, Dutch, Arthur, and then the few folks that we know from the first game.
Okay, so we got
Bill. Oh, and Hosea, the old man who was telling that story in the third trailer.
Well, tell us about Hosea.
I mean, there's not much to tell between... There isn't much to tell about him besides what we saw in that second trailer.
Okay,
he's like, he might be the oldest member of Dutch's gang. We're not super sure. Because that is sort of the story of how they meet in that trailer, where it's like there were two independent con men trying to rob one another.
Yeah.
And they both, I love the idea of that moment where they're both just like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And like, they both have their guns surrounded, like, come on. And then become best friends.
It's kind of beautiful.
I don't necessarily trust that Dutch considers Hosea his best friend, but I super believe that Hosea thinks Dutch is his best friend, by the way. I feel like if push comes to shove, because there's also that shot of them in the third trailer where like everyone's in that, like, what looks like kind of a mountain cabin in the dark, and everyone's like cold and clearly pissed off.
Yeah.
And there's a lot less of them than there was in that first shot in the woods. But like, Hosea's the one who's like right next to Dutch, and like, even Arthur's giving him some side eye, like, oh, boss, you kind of fucked up here. But Hosea's just like right there. Like, I feel like that's going to go real bad for Hosea real quick someday. Like,
well, there's a big old cast in this movie of people who kill for a living, or at least rob for a living.
Thing.
And there's, this is, most of these folks are not going to make it out of here. I think we can assume that, right?
I mean, I have a very strong assumption that Arthur's probably not going to make it out of this game alive.
You know, I've wondered about that, because John died when we didn't necessarily expect him to. And I wonder if Arthur will live.
I would love to see
that. Because we expect him to die.
I would love to see that.
There's a part of me that wonders about that.
You know, I have a very strong sneaking suspicion that maybe Sadie will live. I really hope Lenny will live.
Why do you hope Lenny lives?
Because I liked Lenny. He was just kind of like chilling in the background. He was the dude that stood up for Bill.
Uh-huh.
And I have to kind of respect a man for that, to the point where he's like, you know what? This guy's a fucking idiot. He is the piece of shit of this whole gang. Like, of all of us, he's probably the worst guy here. But you know what you can't do? You can't treat him worse because of it. And like, I think there's something very noble about that. I like Lenny.
What about young Dutch? What's he like?
I mean, young Dutch is that... He's not young. He's middle-aged.
Yeah, younger Dutch,
I think when we see him in Red Dead 1, when the original Red Dead, I think it's a miracle that his hair is still as black as it is.
Okay.
I think young Dutch, you know, we saw a little bit of him in the demo that we played, but I think most of what we know about Dutch we've seen in the trailers.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's that notion of sort of a pirate crew is, I mean, he's clearly the captain of a ship that has the entire British Navy after it.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out a way to make it back to, you know, back to freedom without everyone, you know, getting killed.
Yeah.
It's that thing of like, you know, we know a lot about him already from the end of the first Red Dead, where he has those moments of like, you know, I've fought for my entire life. I can't change. The world is changing. I cannot change with it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me, I think, because we see him having accepted that in the first Red Dead.
Yeah.
And I think in this one, we're going to see what breaks him.
Okay.
Because there's that moment in the first one where I think it's when John catches Javier down in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Javier's like, oh, come on, man, you're not going to shoot me. We were bros. We're brothers. And John's just like, well, yeah, we were brothers until, you know, you and Dutch went crazy and then family didn't matter. And Everything we've seen of Dutch in both the demo that I saw and in all of the trailers so far, nothing about that seems crazy to me. Like, sure, there are more calculating sociopathic kinds of crazy that can be, you know, very like madness bubbling below the surface. But I think that we'll see Dutch get a little more, mad as time goes on. I think like as that noose tightens and as things get more and more dire as they go on, I think we're going to see Dutch go from that sort of, you know, that cold calculating guy who we saw in the trailer, in the second trailer, where he's like, "Do you have my back?" and they burn down a plantation house to, you know, I think we'll go from that dude to a guy who's very much desperate, trying to not just survive, but also to keep control over the small group of people that he has clustered around him, because I don't necessarily know if he knows how to survive on his own. Because, okay. I mean, look at what happens between two and one. Like, you see, you know, I have no idea where the actual story will take him, but, like, you see him go from however many of those people in that cabin live to having bailed on that whole idea.
Yeah.
And then tried to restart it with a whole crew of newly recruited folks.
Right.
Like, I don't know if this is a man who can, like, A, not only survive in this changing world, but also just, like, be alone or not have control over other people.
He's got to be able to do that.
And I think that's a really interesting thing, especially with him and Arthur, because, like, I mean, Arthur, like I said, the gang's the only family that he's ever really had. And, like, Dutch is, I think it can sometimes be taken as sort of a played out trope, but, like, Dutch is very clearly a surrogate father to him.
Does he collect orphans? I mean, you have John.
I'd assume as much, Arthur, yeah. Like, he's not necessarily like a Fagin type or anything like that, but, like, I feel like, you know, young, susceptible men and women are who don't know their place in the world. Like, if Dutch gives them a place and says, "Hey, I can give your life meaning if you come and work for me," like, that's a totally real thing. Like, that still happens today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really, we're going to stop on that point for a moment and take a break. We'll come back soon with even more Red Dead Redemption. Stick around.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Before we move on to our next section, I want to thank our Patreon producers. Indeed, the people who make this show possible. Like Austin Riley,
thanks,
Jonathan,
Austin.
Robert Nieder, Ed Calderon. These folks and more, those folks who give on Patreon, make Red Dead Radio possible. And you too can help us out at reddeadradio.com if you want to. And I hope you will. If you're enjoying the show, please. This is how I make my living. So I hope you will.
I was going
to
ask if there was a way that I could help be part of that.
Can
I give you money? Like, I don't have anything in my wallet right now because I'm...
Yes, you can always give me money.
Perfect.
If you wish to give me money, great, I will accept it.
Here are my credit cards and driver's license.
Thank you.
I'm not going to do that because you might see the numbers.
I'm going to do like... Internet. I'm going to be like Arthur. You. Give me your wallet.
Exactly.
There we go. See, look at that. Look at that. I figured out his profile.
You're stealing because you love people.
That's the whole point.
That's why it's okay. That's why it's justified.
So we're not following our usual pattern for the show. We usually have a very segmented show, but you've seen the game, and there's so much to tell. You're not ruining anything. This is a blowout. That's the idea here, okay? This is not our regular format.
Of course.
But I do think that it's pretty rad that we're going through this. So finishing up with the gang, and then I just want you to talk, if you don't mind, about just some of the points that jumped at you from the demo.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
anything
of course.
Any other characters you want to talk about?
I like Uncle a lot. I still really like Uncle. Here's the thing, like, the first time that, like, we ran by Uncle, I was just like, "Oh, that's Uncle, cool." And then he opened his mouth and I was like, "That is Uncle."
Yeah.
Well, because, like, you know, Uncle in the first game is just like, he may as well be like Prospector Pete.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you can't understand a word he says. He's just like, bing, bang. He's like the Boomhauer of the gang.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he still very much is. Like, you know, I'm sure that there's a lot more to his character in this game because he's younger. He'll be forced to interact more with people. But, like, the only interaction that we had with him was, like, Arthur walked by him at camp, and Arthur and what the hell did he say to him? He was just like, "What's up with you?" He, like, kind of, like, he was, like, passed out on the ground and, like, sort of, like, drunkenly, like, sits up. He's just like, "You okay, Arthur?" And Arthur's just like, "I was till I saw you." He's just like, "Ooh, shit."
And he's like, "Yeah, it's so Uncle's Uncle."
But then he just starts, like, grumbling completely nonsensically, just like, "Rag him, gang, gang."
That is very Boomhauer.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I'm really curious to sort of like learn more about these folks. Like, you know,
yeah, because it's only 12 years before. I mean, it is a long time in the past, but it's not like half a lifetime.
I mean, it's enough time has passed that someone like John can learn a bunch of life lessons.
Yeah.
A decade is a great amount of time to learn some shit about yourself.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, ask anyone who's turned 30. I know, right?
Or worse.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Don't even think about it. We see a young Javier. We see him in a couple of the trailers. He was in the demo that we saw.
Yeah.
We didn't talk to him or anything. He was just chilling at the campfire, just playing guitar.
Okay.
There was this other guy, Seamus, or no, Sean.
Okay.
I say Seamus because he was Irish as fuck.
Okay. Do you mean just in like the accent sense? Or
I mean in the sense like if I told you like, tell me about an Irish person in the 1800s.
That's you felt
no
like
no. Tell archetype. Me about an Irish person in the 1800s.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Every stereotype about them you could possibly think about, that is Sean. And mm-hmm. I know it's bad to just be like, oh, that's an Irish guy. He's a drunk with red hair and he gets into fights. But like. That's fun.
Okay.
The first time we met Sean, he was telling the story about, I think it was the first time he met Dutch.
Oh.
And he was telling the story, and it basically boiled down to he was very drunk at a bar picking a fight with Dutch and his friends. And Dutch was essentially like, what are you going to fucking do? Shoot me? And Sean was like, fuck yeah, and like pulled out his gun and like pulled the trigger 3 times. But it was empty because he was so fucking wasted that he didn't even notice when Dutch like took the bullets out of his fucking gun.
Oh, okay. So, but he did draw on him and try to kill him.
Oh, absolutely, he did. Oh,
that's amazing.
And so it's like seeing those little relationships that will kind of come into play. Like, how do you go from oh, this is a guy that tried to kill me to oh, you're an active and participating member of my convoy family?
You want to see how that works?
Yeah, I really am.
Seems like there's tons of lore. In this.
Yeah.
Well, it does. Just a lore-heavy game. And lore-rich games are intriguing. I mean, there's always been a lot of lore in Rockstar games. GTA 5, which is very much the direct predecessor to this game, not just on a technical level, but on a storytelling level, there's so much lore that it's become a hobby for a lot of people.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, digging through and finding what's hidden in there.
Excuse me.
I mean, how much Bigfoot chasing did you do?
Oh my God, too much, too much. But I wouldn't necessarily call that kind of stuff lore.
No, what I'm thinking about more is the little things that connect to other tiny things.
Yeah, exactly.
That connect to other tiny things that tell a story. And Rockstar's really good at that. You'll find little tidbits of narratives that you would never even know were in the game if you don't.
Well, it sort of comes back to it's the way that they just build the worlds in general. And I told the same little anecdote on Unlocked. So if you're listening to that too, I'm sorry, you're going to hear it twice. The way that they discuss building the worlds that they build in is super fascinating to me because it relates directly to that, where they, you know, the process is essentially like they start with a single rock, like just like a couple of pebbles in a texture model.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, these rocks, does this rock look good next to this rock? Cool. How do those rocks look next to these piles of rocks? Okay. How do these piles of rocks look next to each other to make a driveway? Cool. Great. They look good. Awesome. How does that driveway look next to that house? How does that house look next to the house next to it and the next house next to that? How do those 3 houses look on this street? How does that street look in this neighborhood? How does this neighborhood look in this block? And so on and so on and so on until you...
You're almost describing geometric fractals there. That's very
kind of. That is sort of a way to look at it. I'm not particularly good at math. But,
no, that's really interesting, though, this idea of that same general shape manifesting itself in congruent ways again and again.
Well, it's not necessarily
exponentially larger.
Yeah, and that's the idea, where it's making sure that everything properly fits together, because as, you know, as random as your encounters throughout this world will be, you know, because obviously, like, one of the great draws of Rockstar Games is that emergent gameplay. Like, what will happen when I do run into a group of bandits who want to steal the deer off the back of my horse? Like, I could totally just be like, no, fuck you guys, bang, bang, bang. Or I potentially now could say, you know what? Fine, fucking take it. I don't give a shit. Or you could try and potentially, I think, like, negotiate with them. And depending on their personality types, like, maybe you could talk them out of that situation.
I like that. I like the thought a lot. I think I'm really going to enjoy seeing how those interactions play out. I enjoy that
for sure. Me too. But the thing is, though, like, you know, tracking a little bit back to that design element, like, even though that's, like, kind of the real star of the show of many, many Rockstar games.
Yeah.
The world itself, like even those random people that you get to interact with, everything is that level of like manual curation
yeah.
and like taking the time and the care to actively design each and every piece. Like, we talked to them, there was a team working on horses for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it took a guy 5 years to make a horse's ass. Mm-hmm. Like, when we were there, there were dudes making little tiny rocks. Like, not big whole mountain pieces.
To be fair, I spent the last 5 years making a horse's ass of myself.
Look, we all have done that. But yeah. I mean, in this case, actually animating and painting on the ass of a horse.
Yeah.
God damn it. No, you have made a horse ass out of yourself.
Oh, definitely.
You've been doing very well for yourself.
But we've got people doing a lot of manual curation. That's the thing.
That's the thing.
I was playing Red Dead 1. There's so much of that love and care even in that, which is a much more technically primitive product. But just sitting there, I'd forgotten when I sit around and play poker that people are just going to drop hints about missions in the middle of the discussion, or I'm going to pick up dialogue from the other room through the wall.
Exactly.
Slightly muffled. And the door opens, it gets a little louder, and I'm picking up things. And it's not just throwaway dialogue. It's part
important
of this world.
Yeah. And that's the real thing, is it's not necessarily like important quest-giving dialogue, because if it was, you'd have to be in a mission cutscene.
Right.
But it's not. It's just like this thing that you can potentially overhear and then hear them go on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the guy that we robbed, for example, that fisherman.
Yeah.
If we wanted to, we could have just like pulled up next to him and just potentially had just a conversation. Hmm. And then like when he was done fishing for the day, if he pulled in 3 or 4 trout, he'd theoretically get back, go to his camp. When he was done camping, he'd pack up camp, go home, and we could follow him home and like meet his wife, meet his kids maybe. And I'm super curious to see just like, and this is the thing where I'm terrified to write the guide, like I said, because I don't know how deep that rabbit hole goes. You know, I don't know if it's going to be, you can have instanced personal interactions with them in like, and those conversations when they end, that'll be it. Or if it's going to be sort of a Westworld scenario where like everybody potentially has a quest chain.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's a terrifying geometric web here. Where,
I don't necessarily
so
think
things
that
are affecting it.
I think even just looking at a hardware level, I don't think that's possible. Like this is it. When they told me at the end of the demo that it had been running on a baseline PS4, I didn't believe them.
Yeah. Well, but don't forget when GTA 5 came out on
right, but, and
360
that's the thing,
PS3,
where it's like,
it looked like it came from outer space.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that's the crazy thing, too, is like you look at the trailer shots, everything in that first reveal trailer, all of those really beautiful landscapes, like, yes, it's shot with a cinematic camera in the game, but that is still in the game. That's what that looks like. You know, that sequence where Hosea in the third trailer is talking about stuff at the camp, you can walk right by that. Like, that's not a cinematic. That's not a thing where you sit down.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about not seeing gameplay. So is your walk through the world, does it look that good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. I mean, you know.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
No, it looks despicably good. Like, it was one of those things, like, I felt almost bad saying it, but I was like, this has no right looking as good as it does on that hardware. Because, I mean, it really is gorgeous. And it's not just the fact that it looks really good, because you can make a world that looks pretty on games like, you know, God of War on PS4, the base PS4. I was blown away. Like when we did our graphics comparison about the PS4 versus the PS4 Pro, they looked almost identical aside from the frame rate. And I was like, holy shit, that's great. I'm really glad to see the PS4's hardware getting used like that. But in this case, it's not just how pretty it is. It's also how, like, the nitty fucking gritty details. Like,
expound.
So Arthur's clothes, for example. I mean, it's a small fucking detail. Anybody would have forgiven Rockstar if it had just been like, if I'm going to wear this shirt with a pair of suspenders and pants, that outfit is going to be one just piece of character model rendered. Mm. But instead, it's not. They're actual pieces of clothing, each one independently rendered. Like, your suspenders will shift and move on top of your shirt. Your gun belt will shift and shimmy along under your ass. Like, your canteen bottle will jiggle and fucking shit. Your hat can get shot off in a shootout. Like,
this reminds me of discussions when I went to ILM for a movie thing once, back when I worked at IGN, and they were talking about hair and individual things that were dangling off certain characters and how proud they were that rendered in a movie, pre-rendered.
Exactly.
So
and
talking
that's the
about
thing,
somebody
like
doing that on this kind of hardware.
Seeing that being done dynamically, it's just like, holy shit. Like when I ever saw, you know, what the fuck was it? The first Tomb Raider reboot. Like, Lara Croft's hair physics was like a whole thing. And then they eventually updated The Witcher 3 with Geralt's hair physics. And that man has beautiful fucking hair, by the way.
So do you.
Oh, thank you.
Wish I did.
You can have some of mine. I'm getting a cut this weekend.
Oh, I'll take it.
Great.
I'll just paste it on there like a treble. Sounds good.
Perfect. Don't wear a tribble on your head. There's trouble with tribbles.
There is some trouble with tribbles. What other little details like that that you know?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Is it's like, so that in and of itself like kind of blew me away. So like the horse. Oh, fuck. I completely forgot about the horse. Oh, boy.
You forgot about the horse.
But like little details, right?
What do you mean I forgot about the horse?
The horse is this whole fucking thing. Like it's a Red Dead 1. It's a horse. It's basically a car from GTA.
Yeah.
You call it when you need it. You ride it from A to B. Sometimes it gets shot or hit by a train.
Yeah.
In this, it's like your horse is a fucking character now. Like you have to create a bond with it. Like the horse that you start the game with, you probably have a better bond with than one that you'll just go out and fucking lasso in the woods.
Okay.
And as you build that bond, you know, you are in better and better control of it. The relationship that you have depends on how well that horse functions in combat, for example. Okay. So like if you get into a shootout with a horse that you just lassoed, odds are like the first couple of gunshots that go off, it's going to get spooked real quick and going to bolt and either throw you or take you with it. If you have a really good relationship with your horse, though, if you've taken it through a bunch of situations that have made it like trust you more, you'll have an easier time of reeling it in. Like a bear kind of like came out of the woods at us during our demo, and it like the horse was visibly like, oh shit. But instead of like completely freaking the fuck out and like spinning away and running off, it like, you know, you saw Arthur be like, hey, it's okay, it's all fine, we'll ride this way instead. And the horse was just like, oh, okay, well, you got
to be all right. Okay, so it's not just like GTA 5 where you could steer the car a little better later in the game.
Right, because... no, this is an entire thing. Like Rob Nelson, the co-studio head at Rockstar North, was telling us the story. And you can hear about it in a couple of other spots that we've written about too. But it's a great fucking story, so it's really good. Where... it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago almost at this point, and he was riding his horse and it got hurt out in the desert, like away from town.
Yeah.
And he thought that he had the stuff on him to fix it, but he didn't. And because when your horse dies, your horse fucking dies. That's it.
It's dead.
Like it's dead. You have to start.
Perma horse death.
Yeah.
Confirmed. Perma horse death confirmed.
And but you have to start again with another horse.
Okay.
And so like to that end, like if it's a horse that you've been with for the entire game, like that's important to you. That's that's almost a friend.
Yeah.
It's like dog meat in Fallout.
Yeah.
Only it can die.
Yeah. You actually care about this creature.
Right. Sure. And so like he rifled through his bags. He realized he didn't have the medicine to heal the horse. And so he's like, shit, okay. There's a town like a couple miles that way. I'm going to run there. I'll be right fucking back. You stay alive, horse. And he hoofs his ass all the way to town. He gets the shit that he needs and he gets back and it was dead.
Oh.
And that's the thing where it's like, it's not just that like, shit, now I don't have a horse. It's like my horse died alone in the desert without me.
Yeah.
Even though I tried to save it. But because it was a early super alpha build, he pushed the whistle button and it like bloop, and it popped back up. And so they immediately were like, this is bullshit. That ruined that whole super cathartic moment.
And that
so
taught
like,
them a lot about how they wanted the game to
exactly.
turn out.
And then they're like, okay, you know what? We definitely need the horse to stay dead.
No, that's wonderful to hear. I mean, that shows, and this is unsurprising, but it shows that they really get what worked about the first game work so well. Greg Miller was telling me a story about, you know, you have go on that mission in Red Dead 1 where you encounter the old man that's talking about his wife, and you go into the cabin and she's dead. She's a desiccated corpse that he's gone mad and he's like,
yep.
Greg played as a total white hat the whole game. And just
where's the fun in that, Greg?
Goody two shoes. And he met this sad old man alone, and he said, for the only time in the game, I went outside, and I kind of looked out, and I thought, and the only time in the game, I put the mask on, and I walked back in, and I shot him in the back of the head, and I rode away, put him out of his misery.
Yep.
And that was Greg's story moment.
Yeah.
That wasn't part of the script. These games do that better than anything.
They really do.
And it's good to know that's designed. We forget because it happens. We forget you have to design that in.
And that's
that
the those thing. Are... where it's like those moments are, you know, it's like I was saying, like it's built to be, the world is built to be indifferent towards you. But in that, in creating that indifference, it's what makes it so special.
And that's a beautiful dichotomy.
Yeah. I really, really like it. It is hands down my favorite thing about the potential that this game has.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like, I haven't played it. I don't know how deep any of these particular systems go. Like, it is still 5.5 months away, but hot damn.
Yeah. Well, they've been working on it a long time. They've got a great track record.
Yeah.
Everything here is incredible. This is what I want to hear about this game.
Oh, man. Yeah, for sure. There's... It is very much a video game. There is stuff we didn't get into. I'd be happy to come back. Or we can keep talking now. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, what else you got?
Oh, fucking hell. How long is this show supposed to be again?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. We are pushing out to the boundaries here, and we still have another segment to get through. So.
God, all right. Well, I'll tell you what. How about I come back in a couple weeks?
How about you come back and we talk about this again? Right. I like this plan a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching. We are going to move forward with the next segment in just a moment. Be right back.
Perfect.
So during that break, we decided John is definitely coming back.
Okay,
that's
good.
Absolutely happening. We're going to have a part two of I've Seen Red Dead Redemption with John Ryan.
Great. We'll have a Red Dead Blowout part two.
Yeah, we're going to do it because it's just too good not to get into.
I'm so excited.
We do have a few other little parts of the show we got to get through real quickly. First off, we've been playing on the trail where I've been playing through Red Dead 1.
Oh, good. Because you know what I've also been doing.
Well, that's what
I've
I wanted to
ask you
about.
Also been playing through Red Dead
1. So rather than hear my chronicle of playing through Red Dead 1, I want to hear about what's been happening to you as you revisit this game for the first time in ages. What's it like for
you? So I got back from my demo about 8 weeks ago, and I immediately was like, I have to fucking play Red Dead, holy shit. And I started to play the story mode for a little while, and I realized that I still had a game save from the last time that I restarted Red Dead when it first dropped on Xbox One backwards compatibility.
Oh, like you had 20, your save.
Like 2015 or 2016
so
or something.
So you played it when it popped back into compatibility.
So yeah, I started replaying it. So nice. I played through about the first probably two-thirds of that game like 2 years ago.
So you're hopping in fairly late.
Well, so what happened was I got in, realized where I was, and I was like, well... So I was like, okay, I'm right at the part where I just ran into Dutch in the bank for the first time.
Yeah.
Where he's like trying to rob the bank. He kills that teller and then the Edgar Ross and some other, I forget the other guy. What the hell is his name?
I don't remember.
Fucking Bert to Edgar Ross's Ernie.
Right. You're ahead of where we are in the game anyway right now. So
oh, okay, perfect,
go ahead.
Great. Yeah. So anyways, I'm not going to go too far ahead because I was like, okay, this is fun, but I kind of forget what got me here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go back and play through because there were like, four or five times in the last 6 years that I've just restarted Red Dead because I should play that again. So I've played the opening to Red Dead Redemption probably about five fucking times in the last half decade. So I said, you know what? No, it's okay. Fuck this. I'm going to see what's happening in Red Dead Online.
Ooh.
And you know what's a fun thing, Jared?
What's that?
The servers still work.
No
and
kidding.
And you know what's a funner thing?
What's that?
They actually are stable now. Or stable-ish.
Okay.
When it first launched on backwards compatibility, I was like, oh, fuck, yes, Red Dead Online. And it was broken. You couldn't get into any games. Like, and even if you did, it would be that thing where like you just see a dude and he's just flying the fuck away into space or like glitching out to the point where like his body map paints over an entire town. It was ugly. It was bad.
But now
it is not perfect.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely, like, I ran into a couple of cheaters for sure.
Yeah.
But you can still feasibly jump in, start a private match with a posse, get a group together, go take out gang outposts. So I've been playing Red Dead Online for the last like 3 months. And
wow.
It is fucking delightful. And why haven't we played together?
Okay, why? Because that's a part of the game I never got as into.
Oh, it's so good.
It was not, I mean, I'm obviously familiar with it, but it did not draw me in as much. So we'll have to play together.
Please. Oh my God, please. Yes, let's
play together.
Do that.
Okay.
And that's what we can talk about the next time we're here.
I love that. Adventures. Absolutely.
No, I mean, that's the thing where it is, to me, that was like, because GTA 4 online, you could opt into a free roam mode, like, but you had to actively choose it.
Yeah.
And with Red Dead, that was the first iteration, really, of what we saw turn into GTA Online.
Yeah.
Where you don't load into like a menu and pick what you want to do. You load into the world and then you go from there.
You're kind of just in there and now you're going to figure out what thing you want to go
on. Exactly.
There's plenty of instances, but there's also that constant.
Right. Like you can start team death matches. You can start PvP. You can start
racing Hot Wheels cars in the sky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've actually been playing a lot of Red Dead Online and it is still really fun. Like the only thing that I wish that had been added into it when it first launched that I'm just mad personally because I'm a real dick to other people is that you can't lasso folks.
Oh, okay.
That's the one.
You
want
to hog tie somebody?
No, I want to lasso him and drag him behind my horse.
Oh, okay.
I want to ass haul him. Because you can't keel haul him. You can't road haul him. So I feel like with the ass of my horse behind me, it's an ass haul, right?
Is that how it works? I don't know.
I assume.
I don't know the nomenclature.
I think technically it's road haul.
It's a road haul?
Or
path haul?
Keel hauling. When I finally came to understand what a true keel hauling was.
Oh, man, it's terrible.
That's the most awful thing in the world. The fact that it was designed to pull you under the boat where the barnacles were on the hull and tear your skin off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. That's not like a pleasant, like, oh, that's a fun way of punishing someone for a minor crime. It's no, we're going to fucking kill you and it's going to hurt the whole time you're dying.
Yeah, that's just the worst thing ever.
Yeah, it's really terrible. Anyways, I really, really hope to see, because we know there's going to be some kind of online component to Red Dead Redemption 2. I would be surprised if it wasn't rolled out in a similar fashion to GTA Online, where the single player drops and then like 2 weeks or a month later the multiplayer drops. But I have no...
And then it keeps iteratively growing.
Right, exactly.
Because that's the thing about GTA 5. It's the... You talk about your support, new modes, new things to do. I mean, that game has evolved to the point that it's...
It blows my mind, honestly. Like, I got the chance to sit down with Imran Sarwar, who I believe that's how he pronounces his name, and I'm really fucking sorry if that's incorrect. He, you know, he's the content director for GTA Online.
Yeah.
And GTA Online is kind of my beat at IGN. Like, you remember the days we used to get updates every week. We still do. And so, you know, I had to pull him aside and I was like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, how do you people do it? Because it's one of those
things. What did he say?
She's just like, well, we like it. It's fun.
Yeah. Like, did they ever sleep?
Probably not.
Okay.
I don't know. But it's one of those things where, like, you look at all of the content drops that they've had, and, like, not just, like, new cars here and there, but, like, almost every 2 or 3 weeks, like, a brand new mode, like, a whole newly designed game mode, like, the Doomsday heists, the big proper, like, content drops with, like, new mission types, new multiplayer modes, and new vehicles, and, like, whole fucking new mechanics.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. I think the part where it rolled over for me, I always thought it was amazing, but when they were just like, and by the way, you can create your own stuff.
Oh, yeah, the content creator was fucking
great. That was incredible. And then the second one of those was like, and now Hot Wheels cars in the sky, everyone.
Right, and now it's just like, you know what? No, fucking, we're just going to go completely, like, the shark is over the tank at this point, like, or the bike is over the shark.
And I was all about that. I mean, that's absolutely. It's like, yeah, that's kind of nuts. So with GTAO, what becomes possible in the future?
That's the thing. Like, looking at what came out of GTA Online, like, even though they did admittedly have a rocky start, like, and they're very self-aware about that. Like,
I doubt they could not be.
They gave themselves a fair bit of shit for the initial launch of GTA Online. And I think that they've admitted that publicly, so that's not too untoward of me to say. But yeah, so, like, looking ahead to Reddit Online, like, I'm sure that the modern side of things in GTA will probably still keep getting supported, but also, like, I'm really curious to see, like, will we get a content creator for Red Dead Redemption 2 online? Like, what will that look like? Because how many things can you do in that world?
Like, I got some ideas.
Oh, definitely. Look, like, I'm curious to see how it's going to go. But, like, just from the technical limitations alone, like, some of the most interesting game modes in GTA Online are due to Harrier jets and submarine cars. Yeah. Like, you know, I would love to see something like an Undead Nightmare come down for it, where it's like, you know, either zombies are fun, or, like, take the fucking, like, lean into the Westworld comparison, like, have it be fucking pirates and, Jesus, cowboys and robots.
Yeah.
Or fucking do the Harrison Ford thing, fucking cowboys and aliens.
Oh, that works too.
I would love that. Because we know aliens are a thing in the GTA universe.
Exactly.
So why can't they be a part?
And they're the same universe.
Yeah, exactly.
We know that too.
Yeah, because John Marston is a granddad.
Yeah, you can choose him as one of your ancestors.
Even though I think that that's more of a fun nod. So here's why I say that. Because San Andreas is supposed to be California. Mm-hmm. And in Red Dead 1 and in, I believe we've heard it in Trailer 2 or something from that. But, like, in Red Dead 1, they reference trying to get out back to California.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so I don't know whether those two are actually the same.
I was won over when I went, is it Michael's library or Franklin's library where Red Dead Redemption by Marston is one of the books on the shelf?
Oh, I didn't even notice that is direct. Yeah, wow. All right. Well, then I guess that's in the same universe then.
Yeah.
I'm a fucking idiot.
There's a Red Dead book by somebody called Marston on one of the shelves.
Fucking love that. Perfect.
That's great.
Well, so you got it scooped here, guys. I'm a dumbass.
Nonsense. I think you know a little bit about this. We're talking about expertise for a minute. This guy really does know that universe better than I think almost anybody outside that company.
Thanks, buddy. It's only because I've had to throw myself headfirst into it for the last, like, 6 months.
Yeah, we used to work together on
GTA.
Yep. And now you're here doing the Red Dead Beat full time.
Yeah, I mean, Red Dead, GTA. I mean, I still work for work on a handful of other wikis and projects. Like, I'm working on Fortnite and stuff right now.
So, right. But this is going
to
be
when this drops. I was saying this to some other guys last week. Like, this might be the first time, maybe ever, that we get the entire in-house wikis team working on a project together.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you were Fallout 4. And that wasn't the full team.
Yeah, I don't think that was the full team.
Because we were on GTA 5 together.
Brendan helped some with Fallout 4. But,
yeah, well, that's the thing. It was teams of two for the most part. Because it was you and Brendan, and then I was on something else.
Yeah.
And then it
GTA was you and I.
GTA was you and me. Metal Gear 5 was you and me again. Yeah. And so anyways, like, that's the thing where
it's such a vast project.
It really, really is.
And I think, you know, again, we talk a lot about hype, but there's a big difference between what we want something to be and what it looks like something is going to be when we have a reason to trust. And now we have a reason to trust.
And that's the thing is, you know, there's a lot of times when being a member of the gaming press, I see and rightly and think that folks are right to say, like, this is a game that's getting overhyped because there could be a lot of problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
And about probably half the time, those problems end up being the case. But the nice thing is with their track record, like, I have none of those concerns about this based on what I've seen, what I've heard, and what they've already shown us in the last 15 years.
Did you have fun meeting the people who make the games?
Oh my God, of course. They're great. Yeah. They're great human beings. And like, that's it. It was really cool to be invited on a studio tour and to see all this stuff, but it was really I've been on a few studio visits in my time in the gaming industry, and this was far and away the most transparent, open, welcoming visit that I've ever had. And it blows my fucking mind because, you know, Rockstar is traditionally a very secretive studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's sort of the part of the reason that happened, like, not only to show us, like, really what they're working on, like, the tone of it, the scope of it, like, the fact that there's a fucking team of dudes building, like, fist-sized rocks, sculpting them individually just so they can roll down a hill.
Yeah.
But to remind you that, like, those rocks are made by people, that people actually make these games. It's not just this giant factory printing money that is also putting out video games. There's, like, people working round the fucking clock. And the cool thing, too, is that, like, you know, previously, I think Red Dead 1 was, what, Rockstar San Diego?
Mm-hmm.
And then GTA 5, I believe, is Rockstar North.
What, GTA 5?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Pretty sure it's Rockstar North.
But. Yeah. But so Red Dead Redemption 2 is just Rockstar.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, Toronto. It's not North. It's not San Diego. It is the whole company working round the clock for 8 fucking years, like, around the global clock. So it's like when they get up in the UK, they've got emails from Australia. And then at the end of the day in New York, they have emails in LA.
And it just kind
of
rolls.
Right. And it's not like the global development cycle is something that is very clearly done by a lot of studios,
but it's not an easy thing to manage.
No, but the other thing too is, like, you know, you look at it on the scale of it, like, Ubisoft is one of the studios that I think utilizes the global development strategy really, really well.
Yeah.
But they're working on putting out 5 games every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, you know, probably a half dozen or more proper studio teams working on one product for almost a decade.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
And exciting.
And, I don't say insane like crazy, no, but, like, that's a really, 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 really promising sign I don't need to worry.
Yeah, when you talk about Rockstar and their secrecy, I think one of the reasons, the impression I've always gotten of them is that they're secretive because they don't want to show it to you till it's
right
ready, because they're making.
Exactly. And that's the thing where it's like, you know, they want to make sure that the experience that you get is the experience they want you to have.
Yeah, that what they were trying to create.
Right. Like, they're not going to show you the fucking broken horse thing because that's not what they want you to experience. They want you to experience what it's like to lose your horse, to feel that loss of both functionality and, you know, companionship.
Yeah.
And to have that sit with you when you have to then go and, you know, get another one, and you have to train it, and you're like, fuck, I can't believe I let my horse die. God damn it. I'm an idiot.
Nonsense. No idiosity here. All right. Headed into the final segments. Real quick, we're going to cover all the stuff you haven't seen yet, so
oh, man.
Be right back. And we're back. There's been so much news this week. Like I said, we're actually going to cover more in another episode where John Ryan's going to be back.
Yeah, I'm sorry I talked for so long.
No, we wanted you here. You've got the inside scoop.
It's nice to actually like have a proper conversation instead of trying to figure out a way to fit it all into 800 or 900 words.
No, we're gonna get it all out there, and we'll get even more in a part two if y'all want to hear it and see it. We don't want to have an episode that stretches into 2 hours here, so we are going to cut back a little bit on some.
Good, I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, let's not talk about a movie today, which is normally a part of the show.
I mean, the good news is there. I've seen shamefully few westerns. Like, I just watched Butch Cassidy last week for the first time.
I was going to ask you about that actually. Oh, good. But we're not going to do that right now.
It was fine. I liked it. Robert Redford's a dreamboat.
He is a dreamboat. Paul Newman too, though.
Well, but like, ooh, the both of them. Hey, yeah, now.
Ooh, hey now.
Anyways,
I'm all about that.
We're not going to talk about our love for Bush and Sundance, though.
So, luck of the draw. Our random segment. Four questions have nothing at all to do with Red Dead. Not in the least.
Okay.
Whatever suit you draw, that's going to be the question.
These top some, card, or can I pick any? Top, of them?
Well, you can pick any card you want. Choose
pick
a card.
Any card.
Just pick your suit.
I'm going to pick this one.
All right. What's the suit?
Clubs.
Clubs. Today's clubs. We draw clubs a lot. Clubs today. Josh Brandt's question.
Josh Brandt, what do you got for us?
How do you view religious faith in the world today?
Fuck.
Sometimes they're zany. Sometimes they're serious.
That is
John
a
Ryan,
big question.
That
Golly.
Question's for you. Yeah.
How do I view religious faith in the world today? I think it is misused by many, which is one of the great tragedies of our time.
When you say misuse,
I believe that there are many, not necessarily false prophets, but I'll say zealots, people who use the word of the Lord to their own ends, and those ends are to either, fill their own pockets or actively make life worse for other people. And I feel like that is not the only place that religion has in the world these days, but I feel like that is the one that is most concerning. To me, but I feel like religion's place is still very much to shepherd people into not being better, but being safe, feeling that they're good, feeling that they know how to provide and exist with the people that they love, and how to provide for them, and how to offer that sort of safety to others.
It's interesting you chose that word shepherd. Where did you draw that from?
Because flocks and stuff.
Yeah, flocks. I mean, the word pastor just means shepherd.
Oh, well, I mean, I came from a semi-religious household. Yeah, like, I do remember my church sermons, even though it's been many, many years since I've gone. I know you have a very, very intimate history with religion.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, I think a lot of folks watching the show do, but yeah, I'm an ordained minister. I pastored a church for many years, and still... Faith's still a very important part of my life. I don't talk about it publicly too much, but people ask about it sometimes. It's not that I'm embarrassed of it. It's that I've learned that in the context of what I do and where I am, it's a more nuanced issue than I might expect.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing, is that it's difficult to talk about faith in 20 minutes, 15. Yeah. And that's not saying we should stop.
No, that's all right.
I say that I view... One of the problems of faith is that a lot of people use it for their own personal gain, but there's also so much good that is done with it. Like, I mean, look at what folks do with their church parishes or their synagogue groups. Like, I feel that the place of religion is to help people be kinder and offer more love to their fellow humans. And it's a shame when that's not how it's used.
It's a very common fundamental element of the theology of many, if not most, of the world's religions, which you just expressed. It seems to often be lost in dogmatics or in pragmatism. I think it's much... The difference, this is the most... I don't want this to sound like a cop-out, because it's the most Sunday school answer ever, that there is a difference between what defines a religion and what defines our faith.
Yep.
And what I mean by that really is that religion, we might think of something as being a moral or a system, and faith as an ethic. An ethic is something you live out. Faith is something that is energizing and part of who you are. It is what you do as well as what you believe.
Yeah.
And whereupon a religion is the structure that that exists.
Right. In. It's the, you know, the it's the lore and the rules that have been created around it. And for
it's the background lore of Dark Souls.
I mean, basically, yeah. Like, it's, I mean, that's, you know, I'm not much of a believer these days, but were that to be the case, I'm sure that a big old lightning bolt would zap me right in the back of the head. Yeah, that's a... Damn, Josh, that's a big question.
It is, and it's but it's worth one worth asking.
Absolutely.
Because I don't want to sit here and grab my hands. It's an important part of my life. I have a very specific set of beliefs. I am a fairly orthodox Christian. I have come to believe and understand a lot of those things in the context and the light of my life's experience that has taught me that not everything that I grew up hearing is necessarily the best manifestation of that belief.
Yep.
I really do think that the first question we ask one another when we're trying to help God, serve God, love God, whatever we want to call it, represent, is this for the betterment of other people?
Yep.
Is this something that is serving me, or is this something that is serving them?
Yeah.
And that's a very hard question to be honest with ourselves about.
Very, very true. I mean, that's kind of the whole issue, not issue, but like that's one of the greatest challenges of this whole human experience on this weird blue rock floating around in space, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. This is exactly. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, that's exactly what I was going to just kind of go off on.
There's this old story. I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, that at the 100th anniversary of the Salvation Army, which has its own issues, but which has also helped a lot of people when no one else would.
Yep.
That at that first 100th anniversary celebration, that the Grand General of the Salvation Army was going to deliver their vision for the next century. They were 100 years old. And he was going to deliver a speech on their vision for the next 100 years. And there's this convention with thousands of people gathered together, and they were all ready to listen. And find, you know, after all the fanfare, et cetera, the guy walked up to the podium, and he walked up and stood in front of the mic, and everyone got quiet. And he delivered the vision for the next century. He said, "Others." And then he went and he sat down. And that was...
I like that story.
I like that story a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing where it's like, you know, I myself am not, you know, I can't call myself an atheist because I don't know. I'm one of those folks where, you know, a lot of people shit on people who identify as agnostics as being wishy-washy. And my thing is that, you know, I haven't necessarily been proven the existence of a higher power. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know that there isn't one, but I don't want to live my life basing it on what that higher power, were it to exist, would judge me by. Because where's the good in that if it means that I have to do what they think, which is potentially, depending on which higher power ends up being the right one, I shouldn't say that, but like whatever that sort of driving force is, like I feel like we can never know what it truly wants for us.
No, I mean, that's that word faith. Knowledge is hard in that. Right?
And, you know, so it's that notion where, like, for those who don't have faith, for those who don't practice religion, like, that doesn't mean that you're this sort of person who can live without morals. It's like, you know, I like the concept of what I'll call optimistic nihilism.
I'm sorry, I laughed. It was just
it's fine. It's kind of ridiculous.
I enjoy paradox.
But it's this notion where, okay, let's hypothetically assume that there's nothing up there and there's nothing after we die. Maybe there is, I don't know. But if there's not, this is all we have. And we're just kind of bags of meat spinning around on this giant rock in the middle of a vast and indifferent solar system in this huge, crazy universe. So, sure, you could look at it like nothing matters, but instead of having it be like nothing in life matters and like we should all just fuck off, like if nothing matters, then sort of everything matters. Mm-hmm. And you've got to, you know, pick and choose what matters to you and the people who matter mean the most to you to do it with. And, you know, your faith sort of becomes the feelings that you have towards people. Like, you know, I don't necessarily practice in a church every Sunday, but I have a D&D group on Saturdays that I go to. And, like, you know, my church is my couch with my partner and our dog.
Okay, first off, I'm just jealous you have... First off, that's a lovely sentiment. Second, you have a Saturday regular D&D group?
Yeah, they're great. Oh, man, well, I'll get you into my next round.
Is that Casey's group?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh,
it's really fun.
The true mother of dragons herself.
But no, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you make the most of what you have, and you. My dad always said, if you get up in the morning, you do your best, and you've never actually tried to hurt anybody or do wrong by somebody, then that's a life well lived. And I feel like that's very much a good expression of faith. And, you know, he's a man of faith through and through throughout his whole life. And, yeah, I feel like that's sort of where it comes from.
Josh, there's a short answers to a pretty yeah, thanks, huge
Josh,
question.
Jesus.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what we asked for here with
these. Yeah, I like that. I like that sentiment a lot. Right. Ask big questions, folks, because you need to ask those, like, and not just to folks on the internet, but to yourself as well.
We got a couple of slightly less esoteric questions here.
I mean, I don't think anything esoteric was about that. I think in this day and age, with the world the way it is, we need to be asking ourselves what kind of
good
faith
point.
Means to us.
I take that back. Well said, John. But Pony Express letters of the week that you can send to mail at reddeadradio.com. That's mail.
You have an actual mailbag?
Oh yeah, mail at reddeadradio.com. No, I wish that were. That mailbag belongs to someone else. It's a coffee bag from Ronnie.
All right, what do we got here?
To me, Western seems more like a tone than it does a specific setting. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite non-Western Western? Also, I really like El Dorado with John Wayne, which is just a Western-ass Western. That's what he says there, too. So, what's your favorite non-Western Western, my friend? Yeah. I thought about that a little bit.
God, my favorite non-Western Western.
I mean, there's a lot of places. You know, we could go anywhere from No Country to Old Men to Star Wars.
I mean,
to,
No Country to Old Men is a straight-up Western.
Yeah, it is. Really
like, that's a straight-up Western.
Just a modern Western, I think you're right.
I mean, I feel like almost anything could be taken as a Western, like, depending on how you look at it, you know? It's that notion of, is it...
Suspiria is not a Western.
Which now?
Suspiria.
I haven't seen that. Okay,
you should see Suspiria.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Digento, yeah.
Cool.
I
don't know off the top of my head.
Well, for me, I'm going to hop in, and this is a fairly basic answer, I think. But as many options as there are, I'm going to land on Star Wars because it is so heavily Western inspired. We talked about that some before. But Star Wars is about a desert planet where there are gunslingers and horse spaceships that serve as horses, and there's chases, and there's rustling, and there's weird animals, and there's prejudice, and there's all the things you'd encounter in the it's a Western down to the way the attire set and that kind of grungy lived in thing. It's largely a big space Western. Star Wars and Empire both are structured like
absolutely
I showdowns.
I think that's touched on a couple of points for me, so I'm gonna go ahead and say my favorite movie ever, RoboCop. It's literally just a sheriff movie.
I'm so happy you said that. Please expound, because RoboCop is just about my favorite thing in the
world. It's so good, right? Yeah, it is. We can just say it here. Like, RoboCop is like one of the best movies of all time.
It is.
The 87 version, not the bullshit 2014 version.
Yeah, and he's not exaggerating. This isn't like some kind of irony that it is one of cinema's great films.
Yeah, it really truly is.
Yeah.
I mean, it is one of those situations where it's like the classic Western format. Like, there's the tragedy in the beginning, like sort of like what you have in the backstory of Unforgiven, but you eventually learn. They just kind of get that out of the way at the front. But then it's literally just a dude riding into town on a steel horse who's going to clean up this here town, partner.
Yeah.
And he does.
And he's the straight man, and, and he does
and
it.
And he, like, learns about the corrupt governor and the corrupt mayor, and he goes up to the governor's mansion, and he kicks him out of a tower, and he falls down like a billion stories and kills the governor's giant evil robot. In this case, he's not actually the governor, but the CEO of a very big and very evil corporation.
Exactly.
But
Omni Consumer Products.
That is it. The OCP life.
Ah, there we go. He even spins the gun.
He does because of this fucking kid likes the guy who's a space West. He's a space sheriff.
Yeah, space sheriff.
What the fuck is that guy's name? AJ?
I don't remember right now. But yeah, RoboCop.
TJ Laser.
Thank you. Very few films accomplish actual satire.
Yeah. But oh my God, it's so good.
RoboCop somehow manages to be the most 80s action movie ever and the best satire film I've ever seen.
It is legitimately like, it is the, it's not, I'm not going to say, that would be an insult to say it is the Face-Off of the 1980s, but I say this with good reason, because Face-Off is the most 90s action movie of the 1990s.
It's the most
90s Don't fucking
thing.
At me. It is Nicolas Cage fighting John Travolta, directed by John Woo, complete with the fucking doves flying around in slow motion. Yeah. That is the fucking 90s to a T.
Yeah, it is a very 90s movie.
And RoboCop, similarly, like, it is the most 80s action movie you could potentially... Like, the violence is ridiculously gratuitous. Like,
yeah.
People literally put fistfuls of cocaine into their face.
Yeah.
It's the weird, not quite cyberpunk, but really filthy, dirty future.
Yeah.
Sci-fi. It's just, it really is just so fucking perfect. And if you haven't seen it, please do yourself a favor.
I mean,
shut this off right now. Like, come back to it later. Shut this off right now and go watch RoboCop.
So we got Star Wars, Empire, and RoboCop.
Hands down. Not RoboCop 2 or 3, though.
No, that's a whole other can of...
Here's the deal. I kind of like RoboCop 2. We should start a RoboCop podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. We can have three episodes. We're talking. Wait, we get three and we have the cartoon.
Oh, no. It is an ongoing series that goes for like 2 years.
We just talk about RoboCop over and over.
Yeah. It's like, I watched RoboCop.
You know, we started a year-long like podcast where we talk about one video game. Yep, I suppose we can talk about RoboCop.
And also Lethal Weapon.
That's really... Oh, that is kind of a Western.
It's a little Butch and Sundance.
Yeah, it's a little Butch and Sundance. I like that. No, that's really, really good. Yeah, I'm trying to decide if Harakiri, which is one of my favorite movies, is a Western or not. It's so uniquely, like, so distinctively Japanese that I'm not sure. A lot of Japanese movies heavily influenced. Yojimbo and Magnificent, or Seven Samurai, both highly influenced the Westerns that followed them. But
Japanese cinema is not something I'm incredibly well-versed on or really well-versed on at all.
I love to rant about this movie. Harakiri, one of my 10 favorite movies, easily, is the setup is so great, John. It's just after the Tokugawa shogunate has taken over. So there's way more warriors than there are jobs.
Okay, great. Fun.
So
super
all these unemployed.
Economic strife.
Exactly. Unemployed killers everywhere. Because of that, and because of the Bushido system that's part of life, there are all these Ronin wandering from place to place starving. And this one Ronin wanders into the house of a place where there are still employed samurai working for a lord. And he says, "Look, I'm penniless. I just want to kill myself honorably. May I use your courtyard?"
Fuck. That is heavy.
Yeah, it's like, "My life is not worth living. May I kill myself in your courtyard ritually?"
Oh, boy.
That movie, there is a turn about halfway through that movie. It's already great. But there is a "I did not see this coming a million miles away" moment that happens.
All right.
That reframes the whole... You're just like, I remember this one line gets spoken. And I just go,
"Oh, no."
All right. And the whole thing shifts,
sold.
It becomes the most awesome samurai movie ever.
Tight. I'm super into
so
this.
So good.
All right,
yeah.
I'm gonna have you write that down before I leave.
Harakiri. Yeah, it's part of the Criterion Collection.
Perfect.
And then from Dalton, why do you think there's a lack of AAA Westerns other than Red Dead? Do you think Rockstar scared them all off?
Kind of.
I mean, actually, I'm surprised there haven't been more.
Well, so here's the thing: is like, I heard tale that like there was potentially going to be a Gun 2 at some point.
I can't believe it didn't
Red
get
Dead Redemption came out.
Yeah, I could still see a Gun 2 happening, just maybe like in 2014.
I know this is blasphemy. I really liked Gun.
No. You were in the House of Gun. Gun keeps coming up randomly
as well
and unplanned
fucking
on every
that game
episode.
Is fun.
Okay. And but yeah, I am surprised nobody else is they just want to not avoid the comparison, maybe?
I mean, I think the real issue is like you need to be able to do that genre incredibly well. That is an incredibly... It's not easy to make a great movie, but a great Western movie is a lot easier than a great Western video game. Mm. Because like... I mean, look at the first Red Dead. Like, the world that they had to build, the story they had to tell, the characters they had to create, the systems they had to design, everything. You don't really run into games that have all of those things a whole lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough because, like, you know, you'll look at games that do so much really, really, really well. You know, I mean, the thing is, like, unless you're a studio like Rockstar... that has the pedigree that it has where it says, you know what? No, fuck you. We can take 8 years to make one video game. You have to bring something relatively new to the table, mm-hmm. you know? And aside from building a new way that you interact with open worlds from the ground up,
yeah,
there's only so much you can do with that medium, with that setting, with that story.
Well, you mentioned AAA Westerns. I've played a good new Western game this year. It wasn't AAA.
What'd you play?
I played Wild Guns Reloaded, which is a Natsume game that's a very well-done remake of an old Super NES-style arcade game.
Cool. I'm into that.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's a neat four-player simultaneous kind of gallery shooter with like Cabal rolling controls. Hell yeah. And you play as a wiener dog and a flying saucer. I mean, it's great.
I'm super into this.
Yeah,
game.
It's a fun
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. Yes,
yeah,
please cool and game. Thank you.
But again, not AAA.
And that's the thing where it's like, you know, AAA games, you look at, you know, open world modern day shooters. Every game that's been open world modern and like a third person action game has had some kind of hook. You know, Watch Dogs had the CTOS system.
Right.
Saints Row was the like just fucking sheer wackiness of it.
Yeah,
all.
Exactly.
You know, you look at even period pieces like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Where it's just like this huge fucking big ass detailed world.
I almost feel like Assassin's Creed would be like the best hope for a Western.
Oh, I would love to see that. I would love to see Ubisoft take on a fucking Western.
Because that would have a very different vibe from a Red Dead game. If you were an assassin, you could totally create that kind of structured
experience.
Exactly,
and the thing too where it's like, you know, you could still focus on, like, because they still had big cities and stuff there. Like,
yeah.
If you had basically what they did for Assassin's Creed 3, where it's you've got the surrounding wilderness around a town, say, you know, like if it was like the Washington, D.C. area or whatever, or Chicago.
Yeah.
Whatever the biggest metropolis is that you could get as far out west as you could go.
Well, that'd be San Francisco almost certainly.
Really?
In the Old West, yeah, San Francisco
Let's
was
say like
the 1870s. Big city. Yeah, in the 1870s, San Francisco was the biggest city in the West.
Okay, great. Well, I'd love to see that. And it'd be super easy for them because they're literally right over there.
Yeah, so I'd play it.
Yeah, 100%. Ubisoft.
Ubisoft. Go
Make
for it.
Make this game,
Let's play it. Assassin's Creed Cowboy.
I would love that. Oh, my God.
It'd be amazing. It'd be fun to switch to gunplay finally in Assassin's Creed.
Right? Like Assassin's Creed Gunslinger? Like, please and thank
good
you.
Good name. Ooh, yeah.
In the meantime, you can always just go play the Saboteur if you want to play Assassin's Creed with guns.
Oh, man, I was so sad that the Ubisoft pirate game got delayed.
Skull and Bones?
Yeah.
I am, but I'm also not.
Yeah.
Because I never get mad about delays because it's always an excuse for games to be made better.
Me too.
I'm still keeping my fingers crossed that we'll be able to get off our boats.
Yeah.
Go
be a pirate.
Well, because that's the thing where it's just like, I know I say that's the thing a lot, but like, here's the fucking thing. The reason that I love Black Flag so much is because you can go from ship to ship.
Yeah.
Like, the fun of Black Flag is to fucking swing on a rope, land on the other guy's deck, fucking fight a bunch, swashbuckle your way to the captain's chair.
I wanted Pirates Creed so bad. That was the game. Just throw the assassin stuff out and just give me...
Literally give me Devils of the Caribbean, the fucking game that you were making in Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah.
Like, just give me that game. I'll play it to the end of time.
Pirates are the best.
But, like, the fact that in Skull and Bones, you're only able to get to just be a ship... Like, I think it's interesting. Like, the multiplayer was fucking great. I played it at E3 last year. It was super interesting. Like, that was the multiplayer mode that Black Flag should have had.
Yeah.
A class-based ship team combat game.
A lot of fun.
But I worry that, you know, Ubisoft has done really, really, really well about kind of, like, cornering the market on, like, social action games and social RPGs. Like the Division, even though a lot of people had some problems with it the first year or so, like that did, it's great for teams.
It was just bad the first year or so. I know it's a good game now.
So is GTA Online. Like
the
first few months. But you know what I mean. Like there's that
they turned that around real quick.
They did. But like you know what I mean. There's that period where it's pretty rough. It's not necessarily great, but then it gets better. Like
The Division's a great game now.
Like,
I can't take
the 1.8 update, I think it was, like kind of reformed how you kind of play that
it's
game.
Effectively
it was
game
it was basically the Taken King, but for the Division.
Yeah.
But
Final Fantasy Realm Reborn, the Division.
Oh, boo. Get
14's fine.
No. Oh, wait, that's the online one, right?
That's the took a terrible MMO and made it a great MMO by remaking it. Yeah. No, there's a lot of that. I think it's a good answer there. But yeah, I think a lot of it is that it's real hard to get money approved for a AAA game, and you can make one argument on one side, hey, Westerns are big right now.
Yeah.
And the other argument on the other side, how in the world are we going to convince people?
But and that's the thing, was like, you know, when Red Dead 1 came out, like they had seen, you know, Red Dead Revolver was a thing.
It yep. Red Dead Revolver, great. Gun, Call of Juarez, those had all come out.
But none of them were super well received critically. Mm-hmm. They sold okay at best, I think.
Well, Red Dead Redemption.
But before Red Dead Redemption, I mean, so that's well. The thing.
Right, yeah.
That they said, you know what, we've got the capital to take this risk, and I think we can do it really, really well. Mm-hmm. And they did.
Yeah, they nailed it.
And now everyone else is just kind of like, well, if we can't do it better than that, and maybe. Now they see this coming down the pipe, and they say, well, if we can't do it better than this.
I think it's wise.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense that we aren't seeing a whole lot of them, but I would not complain if we did.
Final part of the show week. This is the Red Dead Redemption Poker Tournament, my friend.
Oh, hell yeah.
All right, so this is random as can be.
Okay.
Simple rules, because we don't have betting, so it's... Seriously, completely random.
Okay,
you're just going to get a 5-card draw hand. Tell me how many you want to throw away and get back. And we're going to see if you can beat our current poker champion's hand, Greg Miller.
All right.
Our current Red Dead Radio poker champion with a pair of nines.
Pair of nines is your best hand so far?
That's our best hand
so far. How many episodes has this been?
Well, this is four or five.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's not that bad then.
So, all right. Just dealing you five here. Mm-hmm. You show the audience if you want.
No. I want them to see the end result.
You see the end result, all right? It's not real poker.
Uh-oh,
you got something interesting? Got a decision to make?
I do. I really do. God damn it.
Oh, there we go.
You know what? Fucking go big or go home. I want one card.
You are the first contestant that we've had that actually knows how to play poker.
Okay, I want one card.
One card.
Oh, fucking please.
Going big or going home.
Please.
All right, did you get it?
Yeah!
Did you get it?
No, I didn't.
No?
No, I needed a 7.
Oh, what'd you get? Would you go for a straight?
I did,
yes. Inside or outside?
I don't know what that means.
Inside straight is where you're trying to get the one number in between some cards you have. Outside straight.
Yeah, I was looking for the inside. Then.
Never drawn an inside straight in 5.
But I told you, go big or go home.
No, never drawn an inside straight.
That's what I ended up with. I bet on pulling that lucky 7.
So what do we got here?
Three clubs, 4 spades, 5, 6, and 8.
Oh, man. Look at that.
So close.
Look at that.
So close. I thought the gods would be in my favor.
So what did you draw? What was your final card?
I had a pair of 8s on top of that. I traded an 8 for the 3. The 3 clubs.
Oh, my gosh. That's
It's fine. It's fine. I'll be back. Rough. I'll get my straight next time. It's okay. Congratulations, Greg.
Greg Miller remains.
Glad you're still the poker champion with a fucking pair of nines.
That's right. Well done, Greg Miller.
Congratulations, buddy.
Once again, friends, thank you so much for watching and listening to this extra long episode. We'll be back again next week.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, we're here every Friday. Don't be sorry. We wanted that news. I asked for it. You gave it. There's even more to come forward. We'll have you back, John Ryan, to talk about some more. E3 is rushing toward us. Who knows what might be there? Yeah. Is there going to be E3 stuff? I'm so excited to find out. Oh, anyway, we'll get to that. We'll talk about that probably.
Am I going to need to take you to a hospital?
Maybe. You might have to.
Okay.
Pretty excited about this.
All right, that's fine. I'll just get 911 up already.
Get it already. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, you can reach out to this show and speak to us at mail@reddeadradio.com. You can send me tweets at @PettyJared. That's @PettyJared. We also ask that if you're listening on Android or on iTunes, if you give us a nice review and give us a sub, that really, really helps. And thank you so very much for watching. John Ryan, the ladies and gentlemen out there who are watching the show want to know more about you, where they can find you, and the things you create each and every day. Where can they do that?
Oh, boy. Easiest way to get at me is you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @USofJR. And you can find me right here. Not right here, but right here in this room at IGN. I'm in their wikis department. I write a lot of our strategy guides. So if you ever need help with the game, please tweet at me. And I will probably not know how to save you because there's a lot of rooms out there that I haven't played.
US of JR. Love the hat. Love the stuff.
Thank you.
Pretty groovy. Someday I'm going to find one that fits me again.
It's small for me, so I can only assume it would be
good. My head is just a giant swollen.
We talked about this.
Yeah, big old heads. Friends, thank you so much for watching. See you next time. Cisco Man, thank you so much.